Did the number of employees decrease when you had to pay the minimum wage?
Yes, just as soon as you do that, you will have to, because you ordinarily, in a smaller place, it takes longer time for prices to rise. And if you're eating up your profit with all your wages, this doesn't pay this, you have to keep a large inventory, and you have a lot of taxes and so forth for your real estate and insurance and things. They're basic, so that if the price that you're paying out goes up without the price of what you're selling going out, the customer reaction sometimes it holds you in a certain spot, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who is this man who came around? Who employed him?
Albany, the government, state insurance people. You are inspected regularly, two or three times a year for your payroll, what you paid, your books are all audited, and your boilers, if you had a steam boiler, that was inspected so that they had it. And, for instance, your guards on all your saws, that was, they were all inspected. And then if there was any hazard anywhere, that would be bad for an employee or a customer, they kept looking at the shape of your yard and everything that could cause accidents, in other words. It was very good in some ways, and in others, not so good, because if you did everything that they told you to before they came the next time, they found something, whether or not it was necessary, because they wanted to keep their job. You know what I mean? So that if you had 10 little items they wanted to do, if you did 7, they could bawl you out with 3 or 4 letters because you didn't have the other 3 done, and that took up a little extra time. I really think they liked it better.
Did they always find something to find fault with?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. You see, otherwise, they wouldn't keep the job.
Like, what would they find fault with you?
Well, for instance, if you had a saw, certain guards on saws, you can't do certain work, so you'd have to take the guard off. And certain guards that were there, well, you almost couldn't do any work with them. You know, they would be too close to the saws or things, and yet they were required by the state. They weren't practical, so that after they left, you put them back away. Because you didn't want your men to have accidents either, but it'd be more likely to have them with the guards than without them. So that, if there was a step or something without a proper railing, or something that anybody could fall down, or any thing that might prove a hazard to either a customer or an employee, they looked all the time. Which was all right. I mean, the basic idea of it was okay, because you might get careless, not thinking, knowing it. But I mean, the whole thing was the idea that they just had to find something.
Uh-huh. Did you have many accidents?
No, we were very, very lucky. Mm-hmm. Very, very lucky. Once in a while, one man, hi, he's gone to bed. Forget once in a while, then.
Were there any serious accidents in the history of the lumber mill?
We had one man had a very serious accident, which turned out very well. He was planing, and the one who was tailing the planer, as we say it.
What does he do with the man who tails the planer?
One man feeds it coming out, and they feed in the boards, and the other tails it and puts it away.
Uh-huh.
And that's one board runs through, and one's feeding and one's tailing.
Right.
And this millman, a piece of board caught in the planer. It went very high revolutions per minute. And instead of taking time to shut off the planer and going, he reached, unconsciously reached in, and he got caught on the knife, and it pulled his arm into the planer, so it mangled it all the way up to the shoulder. But the fellow ahead didn't hear him at first, but then heard him, and so it was shut off. But it was very, very bad, and they called him to the interphone, and we ran down, I remember, and as we rushed him up to the office, we didn't know what it was. I had somebody call the hospital, and I didn't have you had to do everything so quickly. He was bleeding terrifically. That's where you bleed to death. And I had just a dog blanket in the car, and I got someone to drive the car. We did it in a minute almost, and wrapped the dog blanket around it and made it as a tourniquet for his arm. And when we reached the hospital, the nurses, we had him on the bed, and the nurses weren't allowed to put a tourniquet on or off until a doctor told them to, so that until Dr. Tullett got there, I had to do it. Nobody else dared. And, of course, I wasn't as proficient as them, so it worried me, but I mean, I did the best when Dr. Tullett came, and I was so happy in my life. And you know that he tied all those nerves, all of that was just a mangled mess, and he tied all those nerves and arteries and everything. In less than 4 months, that man was given blood again. He was always a big blood owner. So you just couldn't believe in looking that it could be put back. It was just marvelous. And he was so happy. And then another man turned around who had been a mill man. He'd worked even for Dad up in Scary, and he was running the jointer. And a jointer is a very dangerous machine because this knife is working here, and you're pushing things over it.
Yes. What does it do, the jointer?
It planes off, or as the joint that takes off, or could it rabbit, or doing things like that. You can rabbit outdoor sills. You might be pushing it along, and if you weren't watching, and the board slipped or something, you could push your hand onto it, which would take it off. And this man turned around as someone opened the door of the shop, and he lost his thumb. But we otherwise, just little cuts or something, we were very, very lucky. I can just remember those two serious accidents.
Mm-hmm. Did the man lose his thumb? Did he work there anymore?
Yes, he came back when it was finished, you know, when it was done and worked, although he was nearly ready to repair when he did it. He'd done that work all his life. Wasn't it a shame?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, you feel so badly when something happens.
What were your employees paid early in the 20s, just when you were starting?
I can't remember so much of the other thing on the Teamsters, but I know early in the 20s the Teamsters received $20 a week, and they worked 6 days a week, and they took care of their teams, you know,
mm-hmm.
On the side. And
were those teams owned by the mill or by the Teamsters themselves?
About $48 a week. I beg your pardon?
Were those teams owned by the mill?
Yeah, we owned them. So that they had to feed and water and take care of the barn, too.
Mm. So the lumber mill here on Elm Street had a barn, a horse barn.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'd forgotten. I didn't mention that on the set. There was another great big horse barn.
Mm-hmm.
It was torn down later, and I'd forgotten it.
You owned how many horses?
And that we had five, I think, yeah, two teams and a single horse, if I remember correctly, honey.
Uh-huh. Was there one man to take care of it, supervise it, or?
No, there would be a man for each one of them, because he might be sent out with orders and somebody else. And the single horse was used around the yard, more or less, for drawing things around the yard.
Mm-hmm. Was wood ever drawn around the yard with a hand sled?
No. We always had different dumpies, as we called them, on the railroad track with wheels and so forth. Could be shoved very easily. And then we always had wagons and sleds for other work around the yard.
Mm-hmm.
See, we had the lumber piled out to dry, and there were roads and everything just they were maintained just like any road.
Did you have what they call the dollies that can be pushed?
Yes, one or two little ones, but they weren't used very much because lumber is long and unwieldy to handle on those.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the dollies that have two wheels instead of four, as I remember them.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy, so we didn't use them as much. Maybe inside a warehouse or somewhere.
Did working at the mill involve much real hard physical work?
Well, yes, there was a lot of when they were unloading logs and when they were piling the lumber. I mean, that was really hard work. Sometimes the timbers were heavy, bigger and all, and they were piled under tall piles, and unloading cars. And then there was always a certain amount of lifting with cement, even though we had conveyors. You had to lift the bag to the conveyor. And then some of the windows and window units that were loaded might be 12 feet long and might be 6 feet high, and it would require maybe 4 to 6 men to lift them and get them on trucks and tie them.
Huh.
So the, some of it was hard work and some of it was easy.
Did the mill own any trucks or cars later on in the
life? Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, we had well, 3 or 4 trucks all the time. And they also had one car that we called the mill car that everybody used.
Mm-hmm. Did men from the mill go out to customers' houses and build things there, build steps, porches?
Well, we sometimes, at one period, we took contracts and had men that we kept there to do that. And then afterwards, we built steps at the office and had them delivered. Of course, we had to go and measure them. We did. We did most of the our own measuring and then gave the orders to the carpenters or other men that were working for us. That way, we would keep them busy while we were taking the measurements and so forth. And we figured all the contracts, too, that they did. I mean, we knew more about how long it took them to do a certain job than they did. So many times they couldn't estimate it themselves. They'd underestimate, you know.
Mm-hmm. Was this mill one of the largest in Franklin County? What yard, lumber yard?
Oh, well, no. I mean, of course, the Tupper Lakes has always had a big mill up there. And now Hazleton has a very big one in Wilmington. Oh, no. Is Wilmington still in Franklin County? Forgotten.
I think it is.
I think it is. Uh-huh. They have a very large one. And that's St. Lawrence. Chancellorville is St. Lawrence, isn't it? That's right. I think that it was a comparable size for this end of St. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Were the profits of the mill reinvested into the mill or reinvested into stock?
Well, it was usually, it seems as if it was always used, you always, for instance, when you paid profits, you always paid off some money that you'd borrowed. But then, every year you had to reinvest a certain amount in your buildings to keep them in repair. And always, you bought your stock from 2 to 4 months ahead of the time that you sold it. That you had it there when it wasn't bringing you too much money. I mean, in the wintertime, it definitely slows up, for especially in the last of January, February, and March, so those months. That it, just as soon as people begin paying the income tax and planning on those, you know.
Mm-hmm. As the mill grew older, towards the 50s and the 60s, did you find that you had to reinvest more and more money into it to keep it going, to keep the buildings up and keep the employees?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. That too. Uh-huh. It burned in 1954, I think it was. Yes.
It burned?
The sawmill burned.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, tell about that. How did that
Not the sawmill. I beg your pardon. The planing mill burned.
Mm-hmm.
But that caused, at that time before, we had I'm always getting an electrical term, whether the old phase was 2-phase or 3-phase. Our mills were all set up in the older phase, so that when our planing mill burned, we had to put the new planing mill, had to be with the new phase, the 3, I think. And our sawmill was connected underground and all, and every mortar, the 200 horsepower motor in the sawmill would be no good. It would have to be rewound, so it was just like getting a new motor. And all of the little motors that ran the edger and the trimmer and the slab saw and things would all have to be new. And there wasn't as much, we weren't making as much money from buying. We could buy cheaper than we could get the logs and and do all of the milling and wait to see, you had to wait a year for it to dry, so that we never reopened the sawmill after that. It's going to cost too much to put it in operation again. And the planing mill was rebuilt under the new phase. But the shop, they allowed us, when anything happened, the Leitenthaler made you immediately turn to the new phase, like our planing mill went to the new one. But they allowed us to keep the motors and all and run the shop on the old phase, because it would be such a terrific expense that we just wouldn't have done it to change them.
Your planing mill was more vital to the mill than the sawmill?
It was motors and so forth in the planing mill were turned on, for the sawmill, were turned on down at the planing mill. The switchboard was there.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't really together, except that the planing mill was absolutely necessary if you had a sawmill.
Mm. You could get along with a planing mill, but no sawmill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Easier than you could with a sawmill and no planing mill.
Mm-hmm. How did the fire start?
We had a man and a big saw filing machine, and the man filed them all the time. One of the sawyers really filed them to keep them in order. Because if they weren't filed correctly, it just wouldn't do anything at all. One of the circular saws at that time, just the circular saw, cost about $400.
Huh.
And yet, when we came to sell them, there were so few mills going that they wouldn't bring hardly anything, maybe $25 or $50.
At what date did a circular saw cost $400?
Around when we were running them in 1953.
Uh-huh. What did your edger and your trimmer cost?
Those were the machines. I wouldn't remember because we'd had them for so many years and always kept them in good condition. But the little saws like those need to cost $20 or $25 because they're much smaller in diameter. They had on the big saws, they had inserted tooth saws so that you could take out each individual piece. There might be 50 teeth around it, and you could take those out and replace them.
So in case one broke, you could replace it without replacing the whole saw?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who's your general handyman who would do that?
Well, Earl Eggleston. And of course, Melvin Martin was one of our best employees. He was an electrician and could do anything. He was marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Who would be the man who would replace the saw piece and things like that?
That would be Earl Eggleston, the sawyers always took care of those because they knew how they should be.
Did he get more pay than a regular worker?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. What was the highest you paid a man?
Well, it's sort of hard to remember then because at that time, I would think that probably the sawyer in the 50s would get around $60 a week, which is, as I remember it, as I say, it's a little bit hard to remember exactly.
What would he get earlier, in the 20s and 30s?
Well, I think that in the 20s and 30s that 25 to 30 would be about $10 or $15 more than the other men, you know. And then,
so in the 20s and 30s, the other man got about
$20 a week as an average. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody who did something else might be worth more or something. But I mean, that was an average for the yard men and teamsters.
Right.
And really, just yard men wouldn't get quite that much because the teamsters had to do more work than the yard men.
Mm-hmm. Were your yard men mainly Catholic or Protestant?
I think that most people in Malone, most of them would have been Catholic. I doubt that all of them went to church regularly, you know, but I do think there are more Catholics in Malone than Protestants than most of them would have been.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot, one time a lot of Pritchards worked for us, Albert Pritchard and a good many of his brothers, and they were excellent workers. You know, they could just, they were really what you call just big workers and liked to prove to their other fellow workmen that they could do more in a day than they did. They had pride in their work. a great many of the men during that period, I think, had that feeling. I don't know if they were trying to prove it so much to us as to the ones that were working with them, that they were just better men than they were. But they were good.
How did your father and the rest of the management get along with the employees? Were there any disagreements or fights?
They got along very well. I mean, I think that probably once in a while you'd hear somebody mutter about something maybe they had to do, but they were on a common basis. I mean, they were treated just as you'd treat somebody in your own family or something like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have any strikes?
No.
Ever hear that one was planned?
Not that I know of, no. Because I think it was because we were a smaller establishment, you know, it wouldn't. With all of us, if any of the men did anything, they would just leave any of us, Dad, my brother and myself, or my brother-in-law when he was there. Everybody could do everything. If somebody wasn't there and they needed to run an edger, my dad or my brother or I could run the edger, or we could run the trimmers, or we could, if we had to, run the slab saw. I mean, it was something that anybody could always be replaced if it was necessary. We didn't plan to do it, you know, but I mean, we knew how.
Did your father carry insurance on his men from the earliest days, from the 20s?
I think from any time that I ever remember, because it wouldn't be safe not to. In that business, anybody could, no matter how many much you take care of not letting them, they can have accidents. And I think you could lose your business if you didn't have adequate insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, when was insurance required by the state? Was there a time when that came about?
I can't remember when it wasn't, but I'm not positive. I am. When I was first with them, I did a great deal of outside work, like scaling logs and collecting and things like that. But I just gradually worked into some of the office work, you know, about it. But I can't remember any time when it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, what standards did you have for hiring employees? You know, what would you look for before you hired a man?
Oh, well, I think that in the outside yard and so forth, you would look for somebody still that was presentable, and then you could tell by their own appearance if they would try to be pleasing to you and to customers, because sometimes they're waiting on customers, and that made a great deal of difference, and not quite as much in the sawmill. Sometimes they weren't as well groomed in the sawmill, and you didn't mind if somebody was working there all the time. When you built the yard, you wanted them to be presentable to the public and have a personality, because it makes a great deal of difference to customers if they are greeted and act as if they were welcome. And other days, so many customers were in the yard itself, you know, in the olden days.
And, mm-hmm. Later on, the customers did not go into the yard?
Well, yes, they did, and maybe even more. But I think that in the first days that they were looking at lumber. I mean, people would come and almost examine each board that was loaded and things like that.
Huh.
And then we had to be careful with delivery men, because they handled money too. The bills were sent with them, and the customers paid them, and we had to be certain that everything was turned in, you know, so that we wouldn't find later that a customer had paid the delivery man and it wasn't turned into us.
Mm-hmm. You started working at the mill when you were just out of high school?
No, I went to a sergeant school for physical education. It's owned by Boston University now. That was 3 years then. And then I taught Tracy Summers in summer camps and sergeant camp in the fall. And then I went here just in the windows. At that time, teachers were a dime a dozen, anyway. And so it was hard to get a position, so that by the time I was offered position after the summer school work and the sergeant work there, I was so deeply embedded in the lumber company that they didn't want me to go, so I stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Although I loved teaching, I loved it.
Could you, you said you could do almost all the work that the men could do,
uh-huh.
All the sawing work?
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yes. I don't think of any machine that I couldn't run, or that my father couldn't run, or my brother. We all learned how to do each one.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't actually, Dad could saw. Run the saw up in the sawmill. My brother and I wouldn't, we could run it, but we wouldn't be as accurate because in running the gauge, you'd have to just have a lot of experience to know just how to move that log to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that that would be one that we wouldn't have been profitable doing it.
Was the office help mainly family, you, your brother, your father, and your brother?
No, we always had other people in the office, girls, and, well, some of the girls. One, Mrs. Florence LaBeouf, was with us from 1931 till we closed. And then before that, Mildred Manili was there a long while. And then we also had R. Hill, who worked there and was with the customs.
Mm-hmm.
Part-time, and we always had two or three in the office were doing office work and meeting with customers and taking orders and mm-hmm. answering the phone.
Were your bookkeepers in the family, or were they
No,
hired?
They were all, no, somebody else.
Mm-hmm. How long would the help have to work a day?
We usually had about 8 hours. It was changed, so we had a 44-hour week because we worked Thursday night
uh-huh.
instead of Saturday morning. We used to work all day Saturday, too. And then we changed and cut it Saturday noon, and then we had Thursday night instead of Saturday morning.
What would you pay your office help in the 20s?
Well, that varied at different times. I think that... I can't remember what that we'd get. I remember that when I went first to work there that I was given $10 a week. It wasn't very much. But I know that the bookkeeper and those got more than I did then. But isn't that funny? That was in 1922 and 23.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they got more than I had because they'd worked there longer and did more and so forth. And I would say that around that time, that probably the bookkeeper got around $20 or $25 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then they worked up till the end, it was around 90.
So in the middle 60s, it was around $90 a week?
Yes.
Yeah. Did wages go up or down during the Depression?
I don't think that in their bookkeepers and so forth that they ever went down after they were given a certain raise, which probably wasn't as large as it should be, but maybe all we could afford. I don't think we ever reduced anybody in the office, because they were so good and they worked so hard for our interests that we would almost go without ourselves rather than try to have them be lower.